Hey, thanks for tuning in for this week's episode of MLO. On this live stream episode, we have published real estate author Amy Donaldson. We are going to unpack a few of the complicated subject lines in real estate, including how to interview a lender, how to interview a buyer's agent. Later on in the show, we tackle down the complicated situation of working with friends and family. My name is Addie Nett. This is MLO. Enjoy the show.
Feel the music. Feel the music. Feel the vibe. We're live. Feel the music. Feel the vibe. We're live. Good day, good day, good day, everyone. It's the top of the month. I want to welcome you all to a bonus edition of MLO. This is a live stream podcast recording with our new guest, a published author of real estate, Amy Donaldson. Thank you so much. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Addison. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's a super big pleasure. And I'm just fantastically excited. There's a new descriptor for you. I'm fantastically excited to bring this topic of conversation to light, because really what we're looking to discuss today is, what should the consumer, the client, the home buyer or the seller, Amy, experience from their lenders and their real estate agents? Because with all the long lists of different ways with technology, you've got old school, you've got internet, a lot of different ways to close real estate now. How are consumers supposed to know if they're getting a good experience or not? So today we're going to dive into that with someone who's got a real objective point of view. Once again, published author Amy Donaldson here. She's not only a real estate agent, but she is a coach for industry professionals. And I do just want to preface, like, Amy and I don't do a ton of deals together. We originally met last year, a mutual client of random introduction, and closed a transaction together. So this isn't a one-sided deal where Amy's one of my top referral partners or vice versa. This is a true objective and objective opinion. And this goes back to just the entire mission of MLO, the Modern Loan Officer, is giving transparent environment information for consumers, home buyers and sellers, in a place that, you know, is in attack. So Amy, thanks so much for being here. And once again, I'm stoked. So let's dive into it. Tell me about, you know, your book, what you've been, a little bit of the resume, and then we can get into questions, comments, and the
Well, my book is written for real estate agents. Get off the cash flow roller coaster, which I'm sure most people are familiar with, the ups and downs. And it really, the reason that I wrote the book was I had taught the licensing course for a number of years, and newer agents would come to me after a few years in the business with some challenges. And this book basically answers the some very specific challenges that were unique to all of them. And then more recently, you know, I'd become a coach, and I was coaching exclusively real estate agents, and I'm now getting certified through Southwestern Consulting, and will be coaching all industry you know, loan officers, title and escrow, so not just real estate, and just helping people grow their businesses so that they can, you know, sell more, earn more, and enjoy their work and their time off more.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And you just bring such a diverse list of experiences within the real estate industry, not only within the consumer side, helping as an agent in your career, but also now coaching other top performers and new industry professionals. So this is the entire objective, is like being able to describe to our listeners, home buyers, home sellers, industry professionals, what the difference is between a quality service level experience for the home buyer and seller. So I wanted to dive right into that. Like, what should the experience be like, Amy, from your point of view? And let's, you know, as you describe from your point of view, I'll try to summarize for our listeners and viewers a distilled bullet point takeaways.
Well, I love it. And that's actually one of the things that I teach, is being client-centric and as opposed to agent-centric, right? Okay. Fall in love with your client more so than in love with your service. And to me, a really good client experience is it should seem as though there's nothing unusual happening. And to break that down a little, anyone who's been in this industry for a while knows that we, as professionals, we learn something on every single transaction, right? Every single transaction brings something unique. There's a system and a process and a way that things flow, right? There are certain things that are pretty standard every time, but we're constantly learning and there's new things on. So the client should never know that when you're facing something in a transaction that you've never had before, some weird easement or a weird agreement between neighbors or a lot line adjustment that wasn't recorded or something that you've never encountered before. It's the first time the client's encountering it. They shouldn't feel like it's the first time you're encountering it.
Okay. Yeah. I like
right?
that. Yeah.
So whatever experience it is.
Doing normal and smooth. Got yeah. it.
And to not hide the fact, like you might just say, you know what, this is unusual. You can acknowledge that it's the first time you've encountered something, right? But without making them feel like this is a big, right? Just, you know what? I've never seen this before, but it's not that big of a deal. Let me reach out to one of my managers or my principal broker, right? Like bring in the proper help. But like, it's no big deal. Like, you know what? I've got to ask some couple questions from someone and I'll get back to you on that and remain cool. Even if it's something where you're totally freaking out, you know, it should never be our job should be the calm center in the storm. And so many agents, if their client has anxiety of something and their client is upset about something, so many agents feel like the best service they can offer is to take that on and jump in the ring and go fight that fight. And I get that they feel that way, but if all we're going to do is get emotional and fight, like they can do that without us. And actually they can do that better than us. So the highest level of service is not jumping in the ring and fighting their fight. The highest level of service is calming the situation and dissolving the fight, right? Letting them know that, you know what, I know this is a big deal to you. Let me see what I can do to resolve it. You don't call the other agent freaking out. My client wants da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You said these repairs would be done. No, you know, it was supposed to be done by Friday. It wasn't. Let me look into it. Call the other agent. Hey, so what's going on with this and how do we, you know, as opposed to this was supposed to get done and this is unacceptable and rah, 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 rah.
No, and I really love that you went into a few things there and I want to summarize and comment. One of which being that calm of the storm analogy. So I'm one to use analogies all the time. And I sincerely believe that in some cases, the journey through home buying and selling is somewhat of a venture into the ocean. So you'll find some cases where a storm, whether seen or not foreseen, has happened. So the industry professionals assisting in the transaction, whether it's on lending or agents, the buyer, the sell, it's a part of their responsibility to navigate through and guide through our clients so that they're not feeling so much of that hard hit storm. So that's good to know. I really love that, bringing it back to our home buyers and sellers whom are listening and watching. Like, sincerely, guys, like, that is really good takeaway. Everything should feel normal. And there are situations where there's speed bumps or there's some choppiness in the waters. But yeah, it is important to know that people are proactive and then solution-based is what I'm hearing essentially too from Amy here. You know, coming to the table with a solution to guide through it. And this is something that I would like to bring up, and I wasn't even expecting to, Amy, because in the last few months, especially with a lot of the pandemic and a lot of the stress, there's a huge change in our industry. There's a significant amount of people in all facets of the real estate transaction working remotely. Things aren't as smooth, essentially, with computer technology, securities, underwriters, processors. And I just feel like some transactions, when you were saying people screaming, I feel like some of the transactions in the last couple dozen over the most recent 2 months during the pandemic, it's either one way or another. I'm in a situation from all sides with the buying agent, the selling agent, lenders, title, that everyone's either on the same boat of a solution base, or they're on the boat of pointing the finger, where it's like, wasn't me, wasn't me, wasn't me, wasn't me, wasn't me, or screaming, yelling. Obviously, I prefer the solution based.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it. That's a terrible experience for the client.
Mm-hmm.
When everyone's pointing fingers at each other, right? Mm-hmm. But they want, if Addison and I are in a transaction together, I'm the agent, mm-hmm. he's the lender. And say he does, and I don't know him, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what is usual for him or not. I don't know mm-hmm. his level of service. And the client comes to me complaining. The natural instinct, and this is what we need to train ourselves against, but the mm-hmm. natural instinct is to jump on board with the client's complaint mm-hmm. and, oh, ain't it awful? And, oh my gosh, I can't believe that. And you're right, that should never happen. Let me see what I can do about it, right? And we feel like because we are agreeing with them and that we're hearing them, we feel like we're serving them at a high level, but what we're doing is increasing their anxiety and increasing the odds that this is a bad experience. A better thing, and to just train yourself that this should be your automatic, always edify the other professional. That should be your automatic go-to. So even if you've never worked with them before, that the first thing you should say is, well, gosh, that really doesn't sound like Addison. You know, mm-hmm. I know that you're in really good hands. Mm-hmm. Let me do a little bit of investigating and figure out where the disconnect might have been, or, you know, maybe there's something about the situation that you're not aware of. And you can still have the same conversation with the other professional when you call them up being like, here's what I'm hearing. Like, what is going on? And maybe they did drop the ball. And guess what? Anyone listening here, remember this. There already has been and will be times that you drop the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like it's going to happen to all of us. So while that other professional might really have screwed up, be easy on them and think about, rather than thinking that should never happen, that's terrible, it's unprofessional, and on and on and on, and rather than being on that train of thinking, if your first thought is, wow, that was a mistake, how would I want to be treated if I had made that mistake?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what's the quickest path to a solution? Because blaming somebody and condemning them and criticizing them when they're in the wrong isn't the quickest way to get them right. Mm-hmm. Understanding them, telling like, hey man, it's okay. I understand. And sometimes we make big mistakes, right? Like they didn't lock the loan and then interest rates went up and, you know, mm-hmm. You can tell them like, this is going to cost them X number and maybe we can't qualify anymore. And what are you going to, instead mm-hmm. of like, okay, how can we fix this? And some things there isn't a solution for and others there are, but if you're always looking towards the solution, more often than not, you're going to get to the solution. And in my experience, even the situations that have gotten really nasty, the overwhelming majority of them come to a resolution at some point. So that tells me that most of our situations have a solution that is easily discoverable.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Bringing that together, guys, mistakes do happen. That's a big one. And I want to get to a question we have from Casey here at Facebook. But before we do, remember that, guys, because it's very rare that there isn't some sort of hiccup, either on the loan side, insurance, title escrow, the agent, the inspection, the appraisal, all the hundreds of different points it takes to close a real estate.
Imagine, I know there's agents out there right now. Mm-hmm. There's tons of condos in downtown Portland that are currently mm-hmm. pending. Imagine you're one of the buyers mm-hmm. pending on a condo that had riots downstairs over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, right? What does the buyer still want to move forward? Do they want a lower price? Do they want to pull out? Do they want their earnest money back? But they're past all contingencies mm-hmm. and public riots is not one of the contingencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
Right? Like, there are things that are so far, like wildly outside of our control. Mm-hmm. And if you're constantly thinking, okay, what's going to be a good experience for the client, and not just my client, what's a good experience for both clients, right? Like, mm-hmm. I was always heavier on the listing side. Mm-hmm. I always ran my transactions in a manner that I wanted it to be a good experience for the buyer. I didn't want somebody, because I knew that my client didn't want somebody moving into their house hating them, mm-hmm. right? And feeling like they were jerks. They're leaving a house that they had loved for whatever amount of time, made memories there. They want to turn it over to somebody who's going to enjoy it just as much as they did. So you have to think, like, is this a good experience for the buyer? Are the buyers coming in here? When the neighbors come and welcome this new homeowner, are they going to hear a bunch of trash talk about their previous neighbor that they possibly loved and enjoyed and had block parties with? Right? You want it. And when you're the buyer's agent, you want it to be a good experience. And that doesn't mean, you know, you still negotiate for your client. You still want to get the repairs done. Or if you're on the listing side, you want the buyer to accept it with as few repairs as possible. Mm-hmm. But regardless how the nitty gritty gets negotiated, you want it to be a good experience for both clients, not just your client. And really keeping that in mind, it just gives you a different spin on whatever's happening and a different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we still have you?
You still have me? Perfect.
Yeah, no, I thought we cut out that for a second.
No,
that's perfect. I really want to keep this back into the mindset of the home buyer and home seller too, guys. So some key takeaways, like how do people handle mistakes? One thing that I always can tie together is that, yes, I learn something every single transaction as a loan officer, and I'm always improving on how I'm handling these things as more experiences under my belt. So I think I want to tie that back into the home buyer point of view, home seller point of view. And I love Casey's question here. As a home buyer, is it okay to change your real estate agent if you feel like it's just not working? I would like to ask you, Amy, when you're going through the interview process of choosing an agent, because right now you say a lot of people are picking up, they're just calling Zillow or Redfin and someone's meeting them out there and then they're putting in an offer. What are the pros and cons of taking advantage of some of those modern conveniences with technology, or perhaps going more the traditional route of, hey, I was referred by a friend. You might chat with a couple on the phone. Could you give us some consumer advisement? Like, how would you interview?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, just to answer the actual question, mm-hmm. like, of is it okay to change? And then I'll get to kind of your secondary questions, but it depends. So when a homeowner hires mm-hmm. a listing agent, there's a contract that they sign.
Right.
Right. When a buyer hires a real estate agent, there's mm-hmm. also a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Except this contract is optional. Okay, so the seller needs to sign a contract, or else the listing agent literally can't start marketing the home. But with the buyer, it's optional, and the majority of agents are not utilizing this contract. So if you have a contract saying you're using that agent, then you really don't have the option of changing unless you renegotiate that with them somehow. Most don't have one. And then I would say absolutely, if you feel like it's not working out, mm-hmm. I mean, until you've found a house, once you're already in contract on a house, you're kind of mm-hmm. locked in with that agent. So I guess that's the key point, is if you've signed anything yet.
A buyer sale agreement.
Yeah, like a buyer sale agreement, or there's a buyer agent agreement too. So if you've signed mm-hmm. an agency agreement, or if you have signed a contract on a house, then you know you can't really change midstream. But if
explaining that to some of the first time home buyers that perhaps aren't familiar with that buyer agent agreement, because those are like sometimes used and sometimes not used, from what I've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. So usually the agent will be the one that brings that up. And what it does is it's what creates the fiduciary responsibility. So it's where the buyers is saying, okay, I'm going to hire you as my agent. But they're also guaranteeing that that agent will receive a commission when they, that's actually really what it is guaranteeing the agent will receive a commission when they purchase a home. So it doesn't say that they couldn't go find another agent, but if they did, they would now have to pay agent number one. Does that make sense? So they're guaranteeing them payment for their services.
Would you advise people to sign those with agents? Yes. What are the pros and cons of doing that?
So from a buyer's perspective, the pros of signing one of those is that it's what creates a fiduciary. Without that, the agent who's working with you doesn't have a fiduciary. They're not really your agent. They're just showing you, they're showing you houses, but the client agent relationship hasn't been established and the fiduciary relationship hasn't been established. So you're going to get a higher level of service. And generally the agents that use those are the agents that are systematized, that are confident. The main reason that an agent doesn't use the agency agreement is they're afraid to bring it up to the client. They're afraid the client's going to say no. So as a client, think about that for a minute. If your agent is afraid to ask you to sign something or afraid to ask that you guarantee they get paid for their services, what else are they afraid of? Like, how well are they? This is the person who's going to be negotiating the price of your home. You want somebody who's very comfortable talking about money, very confident in the value that they bring. Because in my experience, agents start using that contract when they get tired of being run around by buyers and when they start valuing their own time.
Right?
Because an agent, you can get someone calling you off of Zillow, off of Realtor.com, off of, and then you never hear from these people. And you give up Saturday mornings and you give up time with your family. And then you start saying, you know what, I'm going to sit people down, have a consultation, ask them to sign a contract. But when an agent gets to that point, it's when they're at the point where they realize, wait a minute, I'm not desperate to make a sale. I bring actual value and I value my time and I value the service that I offer and I value it enough that I want to ask, I want to invite people into this relationship. So as a buyer, like when you think about that, an agent who is at a point in their career where they're afraid to have that conversation with you, it also means if you haven't signed that contract, it often means that they never took the time to sit down and actually have a consultation. You just ping them on Zillow or Realtor.com and they ran out and showed a house to you, but they never sat you down and said, okay, here's how this is going to work. Step one, step two, step three, right? You're going to need earnest money and you're going to need that right up front. You're going to have an inspection and here's about what it costs. Here are the other things that could come up, right? That because usually when you sign that is when you have the buyer consultation where you say, here's the whole process. Here's all the services I'm going to offer you. Here's how I get paid. And then here's a document that says we're working together. When you buy a home, you're going to purchase it from me. If you go purchase it from someone else, then either you or that agent or someone's going to have to pay me a commission for all the time that I've invested. And I get that's a hard, it is a hard conversation for agents to have, but the agents who are confident having it are the ones that have confidence in this. They are bringing a higher level of service. And I know in my career, and I've watched this with many of the agents that I coach, as soon as they start using that, everything else, because here's what happens. As an agent, you can show somebody homes for 6 months and then suddenly you text them and you don't hear anything back. Or they walk into an open house and buy from the person that was standing there. So all that time was wasted. And it's It's a painful experience. Mm-hmm. And so what happens every time you meet a new person, you're working, like, it's almost like when you're dating and you're kind of trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a bad feeling. And so you're doing whatever you can and you work actually harder so that that doesn't happen, but without actually bringing up this one simple contract that would prevent it from happening. But the whole time, you're not bringing your best self forward because you're too busy trying too hard to please them and to be their yes person. And that's actually, I believe, what causes a lot of the other stuff that we talked about earlier, where your client brings a complaint to you and now you just agree with them rather than edifying the other professional, because you're already in a state of mind of just trying so hard to please them rather than focusing on how do I serve them. And those are two different things, because in a moment when somebody brings a complaint to you, misery enjoys company, right? So whether this is friendship, professional, personal, when somebody brings a complaint to you, the people pleaser will just agree with that complaint and kind of fuel the fire because that's the most comfortable thing to do. Mm-hmm. But a professional, when you're thinking about serving them at the highest level, you say, gosh, that really doesn't sound like something this lender would do. You know, I know that you're in really good hands. And they'll be like, mah, 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 this is what happened. And it's like, you know what? I know that he's super professional. You're in really good hands. Let me find out what happened. That is serving them at the highest level, but it's not pleasing them. Like, it's not agreeing with them and pleasing them, if that makes sense. So I think all of these things are tied together. And mm-hmm. When agents start using the buyer broker agreement, so many things shift in their business that benefit the client. And I think that's why, as a home buyer, if you're asked to sign one of those, it's a good clue that you're working with an agent who is a professional, who takes their time seriously, who values their own time, is comfortable talking about money, and has thought through the process, that you're more likely to have a good experience.
Yeah, I think you make some really good points there. And you know, it's definitely a hybrid perspective from your coaching experience and then trying to wrap it into some consumer advisements. And I keep running gears in my head of how do buyers really choose their agent and lenders, and what are things to identify? So I think taking from your feedback there, it's important to know, guys, like, it's not a bad thing if you are presented a buyer agent agreement. That does a lot of things for you, that takes a lot of confidence from the agent, which typically will come with experience. So there's something, don't always take that as someone trained to perhaps just snake in a contract. It's someone who values their time. They know the service that they provide has a huge benefit for you, and they also value their time. So I think that's one really great takeaway for home buyers and sellers right there. When it comes to the lender, what I've kind of learned is I think you get a lot of lenders, and, you know, I've built many teams at different companies with lenders that have worked side by side with me. And one thing that I've realized and witnessed is that respect for your own time, because say what's common in my world is I'll get a call, say it's like a refinance. Someone will get my number, whether it's off of Modern Loan Officer or the internet or Zillow reviews, whatever it is. And they'll just call me. They won't even tell me what their name is. And they'll just be like, what's your rates? And it's like, oh, hi, you know, really? What, sorry, what is your name? Oh, hi, Mr. Smith. It's fantastic to meet you. So, you know, the way I do business is I really like to have an introduction call. And I'm hoping on that introduction call to accomplish a few things. Number one being, I want to get to know you. I want to get to know your goals for you and your family, and then your perspective and goals for real estate. Because without knowing those things, I can't service you best. I can't build out a dynamic strategy for your financing, and we're not on the same page. Additionally, I would hope you'd be able to walk away with some key educational points of identifying what interest rate you're actually getting for what cost, because those are two different things. Any lender out there can give you any rate. It's just a matter of how many fees and how much money out of your pocket are you going to pay for it. So,
yeah.
So one of those things, I think that's a huge difference where, like, say, you know, redshirt freshman, I'm just stoked. What are my rates? I'm like so excited. I'm just like trying to pull up a rate sheet and give them a rate when, like, I'm not even in a position to A, know the person, who they are, what their goals are, educate them on what rate really is and what they're paying for it, and then providing a professional quote. So just a little evolution for me. I see people go through that all the time, and it's taken me hundreds and hundreds of transactions to learn to respect my own time. And I do prefer setting up that intro call and then a mortgage strategy call and then a review call. And I think those are some really great takeaways if you're interviewing a lender and an agent, no matter where you are in the nation. I mean, I just had a lady reach out to me this morning from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm not even licensed in that state, but those are great takeaways for anyone to look for people that value their time and experience.
When you're interviewing any kind of professional, if they want to sit down and offer you a consultation, take it. Because the especially in an industry like ours, where that consultation is optional. A lot of agents don't consult with a buyer. A lot of loan officers don't either. They'll just take the application, give them the loan that they think is best without even knowing how long are you going to be in this loan, right? It's different than how long are you going to be in this house? Are you going to refinance in 5 years? You know, is it an FHA loan and you're going to be refinancing to get out of the mortgage insurance once you hit the 20%, right? Now that you can't just get well, how long do you think you'll be in this loan matters, because those upfront costs then get spread out over, I mean, very few people have their, if it's a 30-year loan, very few people are in that loan for 30 years until they pay it off, right? I mean, that's the way our parents and our grandparents' generation did it. But on an FHA loan, why would you do that? You're absolutely going to refinance once you hit the 20% mark. So is that 3 years from now? Is that 5 years from now? You know, depending on how the market is. But any upfront fees now get spread out over 10 years, 3 years, 30 years, like.
Yeah, and just to kind of distill that down, what Amy is describing, it's just like, is a loan officer acting in your best interest? Do they care? No pun intended there. Do they care about your long-term strategy, your break even on the structure? Yeah. I've seen it from people all over. You know, they just want to get a transaction, get it done. They don't care whether it's the right financing. And I talk people out of doing refinances more than refinances that I do, because the first thing I ask always is like, hey, how long are you going to be in? What's your goal with the house? You're going to rent it out down the road? Are you going to sell it? Typical break even, generally speaking, right now in this environment is going to be about 3 years rounding up on a refinance to fee to payment savings. What is your goal with retirement? So I'm glad to, I just wanted to reiterate that everyone, you know, Amy is describing, like, are people asking you the big picture questions that are best for you and your family in the long run? Or are they just trying to jam you into a house, jam you into a loan? So just because someone's first of the line doesn't mean that they're always acting in your best interest.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that when somebody it offers you a consultation, and this is the thing, what I'm seeing and what agents are reporting to me is that when a prospective buyer is on the internet, they see a house, they click the button, and you offer them a consultation, most home buyers say, oh no, we're good. We just want to get into the house.
They just want to look at the house.
Okay. So to somebody who's buying a home, whether it's your first home or not, I caution you against that, because what ends up happening is now you have a whole bunch of different agents. They're all calling you endlessly, or maybe you block them. I don't know. But you're allowing the ones who are kind of desperate for a deal to run out and show you a house, and you're shunning the ones who really have professional businesses and can help you at the highest level and will save you. I mean, for most people, your home is the most expensive thing you will ever purchase. Having an advocate is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Like, I would say it's a pretty critical part. And somebody who's willing to take the time and sit down with you and give, you know, and then that's your good opportunity. The fact that they offer you a consultation, if they're using the buyer broker agreement, that they offer that to you, those are both really good signs. Consultations mm-hmm. usually last anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. So mm-hmm. 30 minutes to an hour, you should have a pretty good idea if you like the person or if they rub mm-hmm. you the wrong way. If you enjoy them, like, they've already given you the two major signals that they're a professional and that they're competent and they're going to take excellent care of you. Then the third piece, you can discover through that 30 minutes to an hour of getting to know them, is this somebody that you want to work with for the next couple months? Because there's a lot of competent people, and if they have a personality that rubs you the wrong way, move on. But if they have the consultation, they use the contract, and they're pleasant and you like them, sign it. There's really no reason not to.
Yeah, I like that. I think, you know, some of the takeaways there for me, personality and experience play a massive role. And I'm not adverse to, I mean, I've only been a loan officer in the industry for about 5 years, but I would say one of the biggest things as a loan officer I've taken is just doing what's best for the client. And, you know, we summarized mistakes and being there, and like, everyone's made mistakes. If you've got like somebody saying like, "Hey, I've never made a mistake, I'm flawless," they're just lying to you. Additionally, I think some of the red flags too is keep an eye on agents and lenders who are actively closing transactions in the current market condition, because there's a lot of people out there who just don't do that many transactions. And the way business is being done changes all the time. Like, there's guidelines for lenders, there's COVID-19 overlays and communication barriers. There's ever so changing county and city law and real estate education and laws that people need to be well versed on. And you just can't like supplement or exchange not being in the game, essentially. Like, I think it's really important when you're interviewing people to keep an eye, like, "Hey, you know, how many people do you typically help get into homes on a monthly basis? Tell me about your most recent sale or recent purchase." And for me, I would want somebody who's actively doing transactions. And just, I would say too, don't be afraid of people who do a lot of transactions, because that's not a bad thing either. There's typically systems and teams built out for higher producing agents that are even more beneficial than, say, the small boutique agent. So you could argue a lot of different sides. I just think getting a feel for the experience is one takeaway for home buyers when they're interviewing.
I wouldn't worry about how many years somebody has mm-hmm. been. Transactions is more important than years. Sure. I know agents who have sold 5 houses a year for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Well, that's 100 houses. I used to sell 50 in 1 year.
Yeah.
Right? And the agent who sells 50 in 1 year, I'm telling you, they have a much greater pulse on the current market than the guy mm-hmm. who sells 5 for and has done so for 20 years. I mean, my gosh, like, that means that they were selling houses before we even had, I was selling houses before we even had the internet as a major part of it too. I mean, I was selling houses before we had Zillow and Realtor.com. And I will tell you that experience is completely irrelevant. Like, that experience does not help. What helps is your last transaction, your last 12 months. That's what's significant, not how long you know. And there's some great agents who have been doing this for 20 years. And then there's some, the amount of time isn't, I would, focus on the most recent, the most recent 6 to 12 months is going to tell you a lot more about their capacity to help you today. And I would say that you want somebody, I mean, again, somebody's going to take the time to, if they take the time to sit you down and have a consultation, they've got systems. Like, that in and of itself is a system. I would not hire someone just because they're related to you, unless maybe it's your wife.
That's a good point. First of all, I want to make a point, then I want to go back to the family member thing and then bring the plane to a landing here. I love what you said about your most recent transaction when interviewing an industry professional, I would always throw in what is your most recent mistake you made and how did you overcome it? Because what I've learned is a lot of people talk about how great and easy and what a deal they got. They sold it for this or bought it for this or negotiated this. But how did you overcome your most recent mistake as an industry professional? Because I truly believe that your personality integrity is proven through how you resolve your mistakes, not necessarily the trophies on the wall. So I want to put that out there for home buyers and sellers whom are interviewing industry professionals nationwide as a tip there. And then you brought up a thing, family member. Let's have that be our final bullet as we transition. Talk to me more about that, because that's a big one. It's like, do we work with family? Do we not? Tell me more.
It's a big one. I think it's totally 100% fine to work with family. If you have a really fantastic real estate agent or a really fantastic loan officer in your family, by all means, use them. And it should be a fantastic experience. Mm-hmm. But you use them, if you notice, I said, if you have a fantastic real estate agent or a fantastic loan officer, you use them because they're fantastic and you know about them, not because they're in your family. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you have somebody that just got licensed, you are not obligated to use them. And this is a conversation that I have with agents and loan officers on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Because it is painful when you've worked really hard, you're starting out, you don't have a lot of transactions, and then your own family member isn't using you, right? Like it's a hurtful experience. So be aware of that too. But at the end of the day, a conversation I have with agents on a regular basis is that I think one of the reasons why it hurts is because on the agent or loan officer side, we feel entitled to our family's business, and we're not. That's a wrong thought. We're not. We're not entitled. You have to earn their business just like anyone else's. Mm-hmm. Right? And if you're a home buyer and there's people in your family, you want to support their business, believe in them. Don't just sheepishly go use somebody else. Have the conversation with them. Tell them, I really want to support your business. I love you. But for me, this is a huge financial decision and I believe in you, but I want to use somebody who's been doing this longer. Let them know. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's usually what it amounts to. But on the other side, that agent, and often they say nothing to the family member, but I have seen their tears. I had a box of tissue on my desk. It is painful. And they don't know what to say about it. They don't know what to do. And it consumes a lot of their time. And I think that if you're sensitive to that and proactive about it, of course you don't have to use them. Don't feel obligated to. And in fact, if they are that green, maybe you shouldn't. But here's another thing that can come out of that conversation. They might have a mentor or somebody that they can partner with.
That's what I was going to chime in on next. Yeah, don't discredit
that. If you have the conversation with them rather than finding some stranger somewhere, or they might be able to refer you to somebody that would pay them a referral fee. And I know as a general consumer isn't really aware of how all that works, and I don't want to get into the weeds on it, but essentially what it means is if you use somebody they recommended, they could still make a little bit of money. You're still supporting the business. Whereas if you don't even have the conversation with them, you've really just hurt somebody unnecessarily, somebody you love, right? So let them know, I believe in you and I think you're going to be amazing at this, but you've been licensed 2 months, right? So like, I think you're going to be amazing at this, but, and be clear that, but for me, this is scary for me too. It's not just like buying a pair of shoes. Like, this is scary for me. And I want somebody who's been doing this for a while. The majority of brand new agents, I think, would bring in a partner or refer you to somebody. And then it's a great experience for them, for you.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Amy. And I would just say right out to the home buyers and sellers, don't discredit the family members as Amy is advising. I think one of the biggest takeaways, and the consumer might not know this, is that principal broker or the mentor. A lot of the new agents work side by side with experienced agents. So ask them straightforward, like, hey, do you have a mentor? Do you have a team leader that's going to help you through this? And you'll often be able to just set the standard that you want to work with both of them. So that way there is a win-win.
Also, there's a lot of newer agents who are on teams. And as a consumer, you might not understand what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that means that they have taken responsibility for their education and for the service that they're bringing you. And they're making less money per transaction. But there's another agent who's overseeing everything they do and whose name is on the contract and who's ultimately responsible. So there's a lot of things. So by being proactive and having the conversation with them, it brings up a whole lot of options and ways that you can support them and get the representation that you want, either with them in the mix or without. And then there's also some people don't want that family member who's either a real estate agent or a loan officer like that intimately involved in their finances.
Oh, but I get that all the time.
That what?
I've experienced that too. Yeah, friends, not necessarily family, but more friends who just, wow, they got a refinance about a house and never called me anything. And I don't take it personally because I remember there's a guy by Joe. He was a very 30-year loan officer. We worked on the same team when I first got in the industry. And he told me that was like the first piece of advice. He's like, get used to some friends just not reaching out to you because they don't feel comfortable discussing their financing. So on the lending side, like, I learned real quick not to take it personally because there's credit stuff, there's bankruptcies, collections. Maybe they're pretending that, you know, they've got a lot more money and they really don't, or there's just a comfort, or they don't want to mold together the friend relationship with business. Yeah. They want to separate those two, and that's fine. I think the like common theme is if you're going to work with friends and family up front, have just a transparent conversation. In the end, you're going to manage expectations and you're going to have a much better experience as a consumer.
And they're going to know. Like, if you're refinancing your house and you don't reach out to your brother who's a lender, you might be able to get away with that. But if you're buying a house, your brother's going to notice.
Right. He's going to see it on social media, all that stuff.
At a certain point, like when you're buying a house, they're going to notice. So just have the conversation up front. Also know that the real estate agent doesn't see your financials. I think a lot of people don't realize that. They might not use the agent in their family because for that same reason, not knowing that the agent never sees any of that. They just see.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. And we don't even know. We just see the purchase price. Like, they'll give a pre-approval, say it's for $450. You might be approved up to $850, but you want to stay under $450. All the agent's going to see is the $450.
Yeah.
They're just going to see your max purchase price. They're not going to see anything else. They don't know what you, they don't know anything else. And the lenders don't share that information. They just share that we've got a well-qualified person at this price. So that's another thing to, but again, have the conversation, and your friend or family member who you believe is newly licensed in either of these fields might have more experience than you realize. I've seen agents in their first 6 months just hit it like gangbusters, right? So you might know someone that just got licensed a year ago and you think they're brand new, but they sold 20 houses in that first year. That's a great agent.
Oh, yeah. Like, definitely. Huh? Oh, man. We covered some really good points. And to bring it together, I mean, I'm very stoked we brought up the family thing because I think that's a good one that a lot of people run into, friends and family. So just to kind of summarize everything for all the listeners out there, going from the top, your experience really should be feeling of normal, and know that there's mistakes on just about every transaction. So experience rolls over into how those mistakes will be handled, which then distills down to your experience as a consumer, whether it's a home buyer or a home seller. A consulting offer. Let's not shove aside the offer from industry professionals who are organized, systemized, open to having a consult, and as a consumer, be open to accepting that consult and hearing their point of view and determining a standpoint of what's best for you as a consumer. You can identify what their experience level is and see their perspective from a service level standpoint. Lastly, I noted here on the summarization intentions, I think those initial consults as well as intro calls really helps people identify the industry professional's intention. And I personally just put so much value to intention and integrity over making like other demerits say on a resume, because in the end, we all want to help good people and we want to get a great deal and have a great experience. And then the family part, don't discredit the fact that even newer people in the industry do have mentors. They do have team leaders, and have an open, transparent conversation up front about what you want the experience to be like, and hopefully be able to separate kind of business and personal. So, Amy, I want to thank you for taking the time and give you the opportunity right here. How can people get a hold of you? Because you're a dynamic professional, a published author once again, and I know now you are doing coaching for not only lenders, but for agents. So if people were wanting to get a hold of you, what would be the best way to reach out, Amy?
The best way is actually you can just send me a message on Facebook Messenger. My profile is public, so it's just Amy Donaldson. But my phone number and email is like everywhere.
Very cool. Yeah. We'll have to make sure we share this episode from MLO on your page so people can easily direct message you, friend request you, follow you. Once again, I want to thank you, Amy, for taking the time for joining us on today's live streaming episode of MLO, the Modern Loan Officer, where we are currently building an environment of transparent education for not only home buyers, home sellers, but industry professionals as a whole. So, Amy, thank you again. Until next time, we'll catch you later. All right.
Thank you, Addison. You're wonderful. This is great. Thank you.
Have a good one out there. Thanks, Amy. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Once again, thanks so much for listening to this episode of MLO. If you are wanting to catch this content actually on video, please visit our Facebook page or YouTube channel for a recording of the live stream. More episodes to come very shortly, and thank you again. This is Addie Nett, and you just listened to MLO.